This is the Social Media Church Podcast, episode number 6. I am your host, DJ Chuang. Thank you for tuning in again. And we are starting to see some comments rolling in on the blog at socialmediachurch.net. So thank you for the comments, Jeff and Vince, as we consider the possibility of how church will look in the 21st century in the internet and digital age as social media and the potential of people generating their own content and self-organizing reshapes how we do church in a non-traditional, non-institutional, and perhaps a non-organizational manner. And the possibilities are endless, and the possibilities are just beginning to be played out. In the past 10 years or so, I have seen entirely online churches. One that was called St. Pixel, where people had little avatars that would go into a virtual digital landscape there in a digital sanctuary, and you could actually move around different pews, and someone would take the stage and pulpit and give a little sermon. I think the experiment lasted for a year or two. I haven't been following up on how that is going, but there was one in England that was intentionally set up as an experiment to see how that would go. And to my last recollection, there's at least three churches that are entirely set in Second Life. Yes, Second Life is still around, the virtual world that allows people to build and create their own avatars, architect their own buildings, and do church there. Life Church was one of the earlier ones that's a physical church that is also doing a virtual campus there in Second Life. But there are three that are entirely just Second Life. And one of my pastor friends up in the San Francisco Bay Area, Bruce Reyes Chow, who just came out with a new ebook that I'll give a hat tip to, and perhaps we'll have him on a future episode here at Social Media Church so we can hear more about that book about social media in the church. And he is working on a church online beta that will be launched and run online first, and how it may play out in the offline physical manifestation is yet to be seen. So the frontier is online, and we have yet to see how that will fully form. And I think underneath of all that questioning and exploring of the possibility of online churches or churches that are organized because of online tools is the financial and the sustainability economic model of what it takes to run and sustain a church and support a staff or support a building. And if we take money out of the equation, you change the game. And so when we're not thinking of a traditional church where someone is paid to deliver a sermon, to provide pastoral care, to organize programs, to manage a facility and staff, if the role of the paid or financially supported staff or coordinator is different, then everything else can change too. So if church is really about the people and not so much the organization, and we can redo the organization, social media certainly enables other forms of organizations to be launched and to be built. So the possibilities are endless. And on this episode, we talk with Seth Ferrier, who is the second internet campus pastor at Seacoast Church in South Carolina. And he started as a internet church pastor for about a year, just as a personal experiment. We'll hear a little bit about that. We chat about how he became the internet campus pastor of Seacoast, what it was like to transition from the first internet campus pastor there. And actually, he's just one of several that I found who are the successor internet campus pastor of churches that were very early in doing online church. We're beginning to see a second generation of internet campus pastors, and potentially that could signal a second generation of internet campus churches. So it's fascinating to see these developments, and I've been following the trend for about 5 years now. When I first looked into this, there were five internet campus churches. Those churches who had physical campuses on the ground, also doing an online expression of that church that was more than just a video live stream or a video feed. And they really intentionally worked at creating an online experience where people could engage in worship wherever they were. And each church does it a little differently. They have a different philosophy of ministry, a different kind of experience. And that's what we will hear from Seth in this episode. And towards the end of the episode, we also chat about an upcoming event in October called iMinistry. And that is a tremendous opportunity for those of you who are doing online church or thinking about online church. And for 2 days in October, they're in Dallas, Texas. The iMinistry conference will be an on-the-ground, face-to-face conversation, actually many conversations and discussions about the various aspects of doing church online, how to think through it, what are some examples of things that people have learned along the way, and how do you staff it, what do you do with hardware and software, staff and volunteers. They'll kick it off with some short presentation, but a lot of time dedicated to Q&A, panel discussions, and time for network. And let me switch tracks, and let's go to my conversation with Seth. DJ Chuang here for Social Media Church, and I'm here with Seth Ferrier of Seacoast Church. He is their second internet campus pastor, and I wanted you to hear his work, his ministry, how Seacoast got started with this whole internet campus thing, what they've learned over the years, and then a special event that we'll talk about called iMinistry coming up in October. So Seth, how in the world do you get to be an internet campus pastor?
All right, so my story is just kind of it's strange to me. I was been in real estate for several years. We're the number one real estate team in Charleston, South Carolina, where we're at. And, you know, I just never had a passion for anything. I was good with things, but never had a passion. I just was actually entering a time of, I was just fasting and praying, and I just felt like God told me all I heard was internet church. Hmm. And for the next couple hours, I was just sitting there saying, that cannot work. You can't do it. But every time I came up with the way that you can't do small groups, you can't do missions, you can't do this, I just kept coming up with idea after idea after idea. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I've been at Seacoast for years. And when I felt like God gave me this, I was like, well, I took it to Seacoast and I said, well, I feel like God's leading me down this path. It wasn't with Seacoast. I didn't know. And so I went to what we call our all staff, which is where we get together once a month and just kind of do a message. And our then internet pastor, his name was Brad, got licensed at that meeting. And then they were talking about how a great job he was doing. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, that cemented the fact that I would not be doing this for Seacoast. Mm-hmm. So I actually started my own internet church. I did my own messages. I did the chat. We had chat roll. Did some different things like that for a couple of months. I just poured into it, man. I did basically a full church plant where I sent out letters asking for money and donations, and I got $400. Thanks, Mom. I appreciate a good supportive mom. But to be honest with you, my setup was so cheap that helped me. I mean, I shot all my videos and messages on an iPhone 4S, and then I bought a light kit, which was horrible. But so it was doing pretty good. I was getting about 30 to 40 people a week with that. All my messages were 10 minutes, 10 minutes or shorter. And that's kind of how I wanted it. So anyway, went through there, and then position came open with Seacoast about a year later. So it was fighting and fighting, and then finally the position opened up, and it was hey, you're doing this. We had this need, and it just kind of melted together. So I heard God right, but I didn't understand the timing and the implications. And so anyway, so that's kind of how I became the internet pastor here at Seacoast. And Seacoast had already been doing church online for 3 years before I came on. Mm-hmm. We've been around 4 years now. Mm-hmm. We went through a couple of transitions. The guy that was here before me is a great guy. He started out part-time, and then he went to full-time the year that I came on. The theology then was, we're copying Life Church. Let's just put it out there.
Sure.
All right, so Life Church is, you know, they're the best. They're doing all this stuff. So we were running ads for like porn ads, where if people were searching for porn, it'd say try this instead. And when I came on, the very first thing I did was stop all that. And so my first idea when I came on board was to stop running ads, which was just very foreign to people. And the reason I did that, though, was because our congregation, our people here, it's not what we do. And our volunteers were not trained to handle the people that were coming in. It was more of a disturbance, the people that were coming in, than it was an outreach tool. So our attendance dropped to the way that we count, which is very conservative, is we counted, it dropped around like 250 people for the 224 actually for the service. Now we're running over 600 to 700 people doing some different things. So we've increased probably about 200%. The way that we count, and I say that because every church counts differently. Some churches multiply because they think two or more people are watching. Mm-hmm. It's been interesting to find out how everybody counts.
Well, how is it that you do count?
So the way that we've counted right now, the way that we're counting is by time, like who's on there for 30 minutes or more.
Wow.
Or 10 minutes or more. And so we count. My feeling is an IP address. And I know I get into hot water for this, but I'm okay with it. So most churches count IP addresses. The problem with that is how do I know they didn't just come in and leave? And so if we counted IP addresses, we'd probably be right around 7,000 to 8,000. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the problem with that is I would make budgeting decisions based off of 8,000 people, mm-hmm. When really 600 to 700 of them are actually staying, watching the service, getting in small groups, and going around there. So it helps me to make budgeting decisions a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I would like to say 8,000, but that's just kind of a little the pride in me of saying that I'm a pastor of 8,000 church. But realistically, I can say, you know, we got 600 people at this church every weekend, mm-hmm. and the tithe is this much, and it just looks better,
mm-hmm. Overall. And to be fair, the online church gets a bum rap because in the physical church, 20% of the people that attend church cover 80 to 90% of the budget anyway. But right. Somehow in the online church, we gotta have ROI, we gotta have metrics, we gotta have
it's a big difference between the average per person in the seat at Seacoast versus the average price, or I shouldn't say price, or tithe per person online, and it's way different. But I still think we're doing pretty good tithe wise. I mean, we pay for everything. Our internet campus pays salary. I'm the only one on staff right now. For me, full time, I'm actually getting ready to hire two or three part timers, which is going to be exciting. But we cover, I mean, our church online tithe covers all that in our advertising and everything. So it's self sustaining.
Okay, so what does a person experience when they connect into a Seacoast Church online experience?
Sure. Well, the big thing, one of the biggest things, the changes that we made that's helped the most, is we actually opened the service 10 minutes before the service starts and 5 minutes afterwards. We just call it a virtual foyer. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you, our prayer request went through the roof when we did that. Mm. And the big difference is now people are coming in early, getting all the hellos, how you're doing, how was your week, out of the way before the music starts. Mm-hmm. And so when the music starts, we're all kind of like we've hayed up, high-fived everybody, and now we can actually worship together. And there's little emotion cons that we do with hands raised and chair dancing, whatever. And I mean, they really get in there. You just never know. But I mean, the big thing is we're there as a community. We're chatting the whole time. We tell people, if you don't want to chat, just go full screen, because we're going to talk the entire time. Just as kind of how I am, I'm a chatter. So, and then at the end, this kind of the Seacoast thing that we do is a response time. This is a little bit different than a lot of churches. Is we have a cross and some candles, that are response stations, so you can write a note on the cross and pin it to the cross and light a candle for someone and some things. And we have that options online, and those are just utilized like crazy. So if you come to Seacoast and then you go on vacation, you still can light a candle for someone. You still can pin a note to the cross that gets prayed over by the prayer team, and that's not including the live prayer. So we really try to take the culture of Seacoast and put it online, which is by far the hardest thing to do. But we do a decent job at it. We try anyway.
And on the video side, are you doing live stream or sim live or?
Sure. I'm sorry. We do three. That was my email. We do three live streams: Saturday night, two Sunday mornings. We did two rebroadcasts. Right now, Sunday night, we're getting ready to go where we do 15 services to 20 services a week, if they make sense. So we're going to hire one part-time for like 10 hours to do nothing but run, I think it was seven services. If those have a good ROI and the people are, I'm not talking about just tithe, that people are coming back, we'll keep them. If not, we'll try different times. If they still don't work, we'll try a different person. Same times, kind of to see. So I don't want to do 20 services just to say that we do it, but if it's, in other words, I'm not going to spend the money to have five people come. But if we're getting 30 to 40, 50 people out of each of the rebroadcasts, I consider that a win. And we'll go from there.
Okay, so you've got a model where it's self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be a major factor in how many services you run and staff you hire and whatever else.
Yep. So I know pretty much if I run a $50 or $100 ad on Google, the way that I run the ads, that I can pretty much guarantee at least 20 to 30 people, the way that we count, in a service. Mm-hmm. So when I'm trying to up the amount of people that I want, I know that I've got to add $100 to my budget to get these 30 people. Well, mm-hmm. if each service is 30 people, you know, one service, here's a weird thing. So if I've got one service and I do $100, and I can get about 30 people. Well, if I add another $100, that doesn't necessarily guarantee another 30 people. It's probably like another 10 to 15 people. It's just strange how that works. But just trying to figure out that formula and just see what makes sense, you know. I mean, I know Friday's probably not a good day.
Right.
Whatever. But we'll figure it out.
The attenders convert into supporters and repeat visitors is also, involves some thinking behind that, too.
Absolutely. In different time zones and when can they come? And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not interested in doing services just so that people who miss it on Sunday can watch. Yeah. I want to reach new people that don't go to church or don't go to Seacoast and go from there. And so we'll probably, when we start doing our 10 p.m., midnight, and 2 a.m. services, which we're going to do, I will probably start the ads back up for the porn ads or the abuse ads or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So people who are up in those times. Mm-hmm. Those may be more outreach services with trained people there versus the Sunday morning. So it may be different. I mean, each service could have its own culture to it, which is what I hope.
Oh, so. Fascinating. So ads is a big way you reach new people. What are some other ways you reach new people, or do you just...
I tell you, one of the biggest wins for us is I created a position called a social media volunteer position. And basically they agree to four things for all of our campuses. So they agree, one, to like or share one of the comments that we post on Facebook a week or on Twitter, retweet it. They agree to comment on or like a comment that another Seacoaster puts on our page a week. So in other words, if I put a post saying, hey, how can we pray for you today? And Nate says, hey, I got to go to the dentist. I'm nervous. Well, then one of my social media volunteers will say, hey, Nate, we're praying for you. So then when Seacoast says they're praying for you, this person sees a Seacoaster and Seacoast is praying for them. So that's the two there. They agree to retweet or share our church online link on Sunday. And the last thing is that they agree at least once or twice a month to go into their own pool or sphere and reach out and ask one of them for prayer, if they can pray for them. So I'll never see those people, but as a volunteer, they're agreeing to go in and say, hey, I saw that, you know, your mom was sick, I'm praying for you. So then the thought is, let's say I'm not a pastor, I'm just a regular social media volunteer, and my guy John sees that I'm praying for his mom, and then he sees me post a Seacoast link, and then he sees that I comment on somebody else's, it's more likely to draw him into Seacoast as well as make my volunteer a discipler and give them some power in church. So when I first launched that, we had 39 social media volunteers within a week. Now, do all of them do it? I have no clue, to be honest with you. You can't always tell. And I would probably say close to maybe 5 to 8 of them I consistently see do stuff. But still, that's people that I didn't have before. And it's free, and they love it. And I tell you, I thought it was going to be the introverts that would love that position. I was 100% totally wrong. It's the people that already had 1,000 to 2,000 to 4,000 followers that love it because they're already doing it. So to them, it's just easy. So anyway, that was a huge win for us as far as getting attendance up and getting buy-in, which is really big.
Great. Couple more questions about the internet campus. How do you handle the ordinances that's sacred to baptism and communion?
Sure. Well, communion, we have a slide that says this is the scripture that talks about communion. We'll ask people to get bread. Here's our thought. Get some bread and crackers or water and chips or whatever. You can pray over it and then take it with us during their response time. We're not real sticklers on it has to be bread and wine or it has to be a cracker. We don't care. Just kind of get something to do with us. We had tossed around the idea of buying those little cups with the crackers already. And like, man, if those sit here for 2 months, they're going to be giving out wine and who knows who's taking it. So we shot that idea in. So we leave it up to them. So as far as you said baptism, correct? So as far as baptisms go, here's our rule of thumb. Every time that we do baptisms, we say, come here to Seacoast and get baptized. If you can't, find a local church to get baptized. If you can't, find a friend who can baptize you in your tub. If you don't have a friend, go in the bathtub, pour some water over your head, tell God how much you love him because God cares about your heart more than the action. So it is a, if we can get you here, great. If not, we want to put you someplace else. If not there, have with some friends because it's just an outward display. If you don't have any friends or you're shut in, then do it to yourself and God will see. So that we just pretty much like have a little blurb that we copy and paste and put that in the chat for that.
Very good.
That makes sense.
Cool. And then what do you do for the people who are regular attenders and people who support your ministry? What do you do between worship events?
Sure. So we have a small group that meets on Tuesday night. We have one small group, and I'm very happy about that. A lot of churches try to have 20 to 30, which is could be great for them in their culture, just not for us. What our thought is people who come online, we want to get them as quick as possible to a physical location, even if it's not a Seacoast. So the whole idea for our small group is it's a churning wheel. So on Sundays, people come into our small group and we say, we love to have you. There's 5 to 8 people there that are core, that are always there from different states and everything. But we welcome them, welcome them, welcome them, and then we try to get them to a campus. So once that small group is all chat-based on Tuesday night. They do post YouTube links, which is pretty cool because people will pull different music or little videos and we'll talk about them. But then we have a Facebook group that so during the week we post scripture. I did some like self-assessment test in there that they could take, and we talk about fivefold ministries and disc personality and all these things. And so we go back and forth all week long on Facebook at random times, and then on Tuesday nights as we come together as one and kind of celebrate, and we go from there. And we're in the process of starting probably 2 to 3 new Facebook groups that are time specific. What I mean by that is, that's not the right word, but what I mean by that is it's only going to last 6 months. That's the goal. It's 6 months and over. And then the other part of it is it's going to be topic specific. So it's going to be spouses of militaries that are overseas. It's going to be parents of special needs kids. And I'm trying to think of the other one. And it's going to be a group where I'm going to lead it with somebody who is a military spouse. And so for the first month, I'm doing the posting. For the second month, we're doing the posting, and for the third month, they're doing the posting, and then I step out and let them lead the group. And after that time frame is over, if they want to continue it, great. But if not, you know. So that's kind of going to be our next online group for during the week in between services.
Fantastic. Now, Seacoast is one of the pioneers in doing online education and online training for your offline campuses in terms of developing leaders, and you've got a what's called a leadership pipeline to train up leaders for small groups, for campuses and everything else in between. Have you adapted some of that for what you're doing with online church? And describe what you're
only with our leaders. In other words, most of the people that come on, I think we did a number where it's like out of the 100 people, we have 40 that are already Seacoasters that are just missing the service or out of town, and we have a good, I'd probably say next is like 50 of them are like new people and 10 repeats. So we have a huge revolving wheel, and then multiply that times up other numbers. But the our goal is to raise them up. So as I bring people up, the first level is getting into a host, chat host position. Part of that is leadership and training that we go into deeper. I'm a huge fan of if somebody seems like they're leadership material and they're near a Seacoast, I push them to that campus to get into leadership there. Because my whole goal in all this is I 100% believe you can have community online. It's proven 100% guaranteed, but I don't think that online is the end result for Seacoast.
Okay.
Our goal is to, at the end of the day, whether that's a month or 4 years, get them to the point where they will go into a physical building. Mm-hmm. And even if they don't want to go into a physical building, a church, will they start like a watch party at their house and invite their neighbors over and watch it there for physical community? So our end result is physical community. We're okay with that taking a while. So everything we do pushes them to local campuses unless they can't find one. And so when I say that, it's with knowing that I don't have the need for a lot of leadership training online.
Okay.
Maybe a couple people a week or a month, because if I find a leader, I'm pushing them toward a campus.
Yeah. Very good. Having that clear in your mind kind of helps you draw out the process and the roadmap, and that helps you make decisions and streamline your processes.
Yes, sir. I tell you, one big, it's a small twitch, but it's a big aha for us was we were looking at putting our newcomers online. And there's a different conversation between how do you do a membership class for a church online and how do you do a membership class for Seacoast online. And so it's like, it's very small, but it's a huge, I mean, like, the type of help I was getting and the discussions are different, because what happens if somebody goes to our Somerville campus, but they work third shift and they can't make it to there, where they don't necessarily need to go through the church online membership. They need to go through a Seacoast membership, but what does that look like online? And so that really, I know it's a small thing, but that made a big difference as far as, honestly, as from buy-in from the other pastors and quality of video, quality of everything that's put out is different. So we look at it like, how can we do this for Seacoast online versus Seacoast Internet Campus?
Fantastic. Yep. Now, you've been in the role as an Internet Campus pastor for how long now?
About a year.
And what's the next technology that you're looking at incorporating into what you do?
I tell you what I wish I could do. How about that? I wish there was a way that we could have people choose different experiences when they come online. In other words, I know of a church that had a signing, a lady that signed, and you could switch between, do you want to watch the lady signing or do you want to watch the message? I wish there was a way that people could come on and say, I want more of a hymnal, old church feel with the same message. So they could click a button and then go see our chapel venue, which does more hymnal style music, but then see the message from Greg. And then people say, well, I want more of a hard rock loud. Well, you click over here and have this experience. Can you switch the skin and backdrop so they can customize it their own? And all these great questions. And the main thing is like customization for their own experience. The message is the same, but the music worship before and after is different, because my thought is if we could do that, then my mom, who likes different music than I do, can get a house group watching with their style of music, same message. We can still talk about the message together as a family, but we all have different experiences with the worship.
Super.
That's what I wish.
That's a great wish list.
You know?
Life Church used to do that a couple years ago, where they had two different worship leaders, and you could click worship one or worship two, and then wind up at the same sermon during that time. I'll pose the question out to our listeners and see what ideas they have on implementing it. But essentially, you can either run two separate platforms, running two different services at the same time, or just run different services that would have the different music with your existing platform. So,
and part of that is the big word money. Mm-hmm. Is money for running equipment and both the different sound things, money for different platforms and all that good stuff. So it's it just depends. I mean, everything can be done.
Sure.
You got the money, but...
And do you already have offline multiple venues with different music that you could just tap into?
Yep. So that would be, I mean, that's a big thing for me, is the customization of it and the personalization of the experience.
Great.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about iMinistry. There's a Facebook group where online ministers, which just passed over 100, it's a private group. If people would like to get in, contact Seth, and you can get them in, right?
Yeah, for $25.
Okay.
I'm joking about that, yeah.
Special deal right here on Social Media Church. And you connected with a couple other guys there.
Yep.
And you're going to have a... in-person conference this October. So tell us about what's happening there.
Yep, so we're really excited. It's October 10th and 11th, and you can go to iMinistry2012.org. That's iMinistry2012.org. And basically what happened was, it stemmed from a conversation of, does anybody know of any conferences you can go to that have church online? Mm-hmm. I was going to the ARC conference and some Catalyst stuff, and there wasn't even a breakout room or nothing. Mm-hmm. And so somebody made the comment, well, all the people that would lead it are in this group on Facebook. So somebody is like three or four in a row were like asking me to if I would do it. And so me and Nate Merrill, whose church we're going to in this Lake Point, we're like, yeah, let's figure this thing out. And we were hoping for 20 people, and the projection now is right around 200. Mm. We've got a big sponsor to sponsor the whole event, so we're pretty excited. Cost is pretty cheap. And so the whole point of it is each session is going to almost be a panel-like. So if we go to talk about small groups, it's, each church will have 4 to 5 minutes to answer. Mm-hmm. Seacoast, how do you do small groups? Life Church, how do you do small groups? Mm-hmm. Christ Fellowship. And the remaining 20 to 30 minutes of the session is going to be all Q&A. Mm. So it's going to be in the audience, people tweeting in questions or on the microphone asking questions for us to elaborate on what it means for them. Of course, we also have backup questions in case no one has any, but it's going to be small groups, volunteers, advertising, social media. The big question, are you a campus or a digital extension of the church? Because until you figure that out, you're going to be spinning your wheels. Mm-hmm. How do you hire and fire people? How do you handle baptism, communion? There's a bunch of sessions. The first night, actually, the thing I'm most excited about is the worship night. We're going to get together, and Lake Point's going to do a worship service for us and a message. And we all can just worship together and hang out afterwards. And we purposefully built in hangout time, long lunches and dinners that we can actually get together and just talk, because every conference I go to, I learn more at the lunches and the hangout times afterwards for me personally than we do for the preach-a-thons that go on during the conferences. So I'm really excited about that. We put some, me and Nate, especially Nate Merrill, has put some crazy time in getting this thing together, and we're excited to see where it goes, and just can't wait. We're excited.
So you're having an offline physical conference for online church. Is there going to be an online component for people who can't physically be there?
Probably not. Here's the reason. Part of that is because we want to make the important distinction of church online. People online are not a demographic. The internet's not a demographic. It's a tool to reach people. And so it's kind of like the conference is going to be for us who never get to see each other to come together in person and hash it out. If we can stream it live, we might, but we really will not know until the last minute. It depends on the amount of people that come. So in other words, if it's small enough to go in one room that we can't live stream out of at their church.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we can't live stream it.
Right.
So it just depends. We have people overseas that are like, can you live stream it? Like, depends on how many people come.
Yeah.
If we can get in that room. But more than likely, it's going to be in person only.
Well, very good. Well, thanks for hosting that. That's going to be such a valuable thing for churches that are already online and then churches that are trying to figure out how they can get there.
Yep, they're excited. And we've the goal is we already started talking to some other vendors. So during certain times, you can go out there and meet with Church Online, Lightcast, 316, hammer out any personal beef you have with them, or ask questions for future. anyway, so we didn't want to charge. This is kind of funny. We didn't want to charge anything. It was going to be free, and everybody we talked to just ripped me and Nate apart. Like, if you don't charge, people aren't going to come. They're going to say they're coming, not show up. And we're like, well, we want it to be free. That's why we got a major sponsor to pay for it. So we're going to do something special with the money. We'll tell everybody there and pour it back into some people. And but we're excited to see what happens. So it's $99 a person.
Great. Well, as we close out this episode, what we like to do is ask a question from one person to the next. So what is a question you want to ask to the next person we have here on Social Media Church?
Sure. I would like to – I love the question of what's your biggest fail? Mm. And the reason I like – everybody always asks what's your biggest win and what's your biggest win, which I think are great. But sometimes if we know what we failed out miserably, A, it can help somebody else not make that same mistake. And B, it might be where somebody could say, well, if you'd done it, tweaked it this way, it could be a win now. So I would like to know, like for us, our big fail was the running the porn ads when our people weren't trained for it. Mm-hmm. And so that caused more problems than it helped. So we had to stop that. But now it's time for us to do that again in a different way. So that would be my biggest thing is what have you messed up on? And so you can help somebody else to not make that same mistake.
Excellent.
Makes sense.
All right. Well, that's all I've got. You got anything you want to chat about?
Nah, man. I mean, I'm just, you know, to be honest with you, most of it is gearing up for this daggone conference coming up because I'm just so giddy and excited about it. And because I just love the fact that people that are doing something can get together. And I'm a huge, huge proponent of churches talking and communicating. And so many churches don't. And it drives me up the wall that we're all like, it's like doctors. Like, what, you'd be mad if your doctor never read another journal or magazine or talked to another doctor because he could save your life. But churches were all so, well, God didn't tell me to do this exactly, so I'm not going to communicate. And I just don't get it. So I'm just extremely excited about the Facebook group and the conference that we can kind of come together, ask churches and talk.
Great.
And just keep the door open. So.
And that's kind of the heart and spirit of Social Media Church, too, that this would be a place for conversation with church leaders about social media. And now, on a weekly podcast, we can listen in and hear the heart and thinking of why people are doing online church and how they're incorporating social media as part of their ministry. So this is awesome. Thank you for being part of this conversation. I wish I could be there at iMinistry, but I've already got another event scheduled that week. So I might peek in if you do an online component. I'll definitely listen in on the hashtag.
Yep, that's going to be iMinistry2012 is the Twitter hashtag for that. So
that's a long hashtag, bro.
Buddy, I didn't make that up.
Okay.
And the person that did, I love.
Fantastic. Thank you and Nate for doing some great legwork and can't wait to hear what comes out of it.
We're excited, man. Thanks for the interview.
Okay, stay cool in the heat.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
All right, bye.
Thank you again, Seth Ferrier. Great chatting with you, and I do hope to meet you in person one day. Love your sense of humor, and wish you and the team the best time there at iMinistry Conference. I wish I could be there, but I already had a prior commitment. So maybe next time, maybe this will be a tremendous launch for a series of events and perhaps even regional ones, just to stick a little bug in your ear of how this could really serve the church at large so that we can do the best in using our creativity and in using social media and the internet to better spread the gospel as well as to disciple people and, do all the things that the church should do with fellowship and outreach and personal spiritual growth and community growth, social justice, common good, and what have you. I'm going to wrap up the episode here. I had a couple of other articles that I want to respond to, and I'm just going to save that for a future episode about how one was about how social media is changing the way we do church. Great thoughts from Phil Petty, a guy from England, wrote a couple blog posts about that. I want to respond to that in an upcoming episode. And secondly, an article, actually a paper from a seminary student in Philadelphia that that I chatted with over the phone for over half an hour, and there was one of my quotes that was included in that paper, and I wanted to share with you some of the thoughts I shared with him and also a little bit of my reaction to his paper. But you'll have to tune in later for that. It may be in the next episode or the one following that, but I wanted to bookmark it here on the record so that I will remember to do it in an upcoming episode. Again, would love to hear your comments along with Jeff and Vince and you there at socialmediachurch.net. And you can add a comment or call in with your voicemail, and I'll incorporate it into a future episode as well, because this really is a place for conversations with church leaders about social media. And this concludes episode number 6 of the Social Media Church podcast. And until next time, we'll stay connected with you online.